I'm Frank Vaughn. It's August 18th, 2026, and you may feel like you're financially under strain, that your money's just not going as far as it used to, and you might be inclined to believe it's because of the policies of the government, which is still in power, but was led by our former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau as he printed enormous amounts of money to throw at the crisis of a glorified super flu. I thought maybe we should check in with Justin Trudeau and see how he's doing.
In the Home Hardware on St. Laurent Street. I can get used to you calling me baby.
If the sight of that infuriates you, good. You're human, as it should. Playing around with other people's property, presuming he hasn't paid for it yet, jumping around in somebody's store, acting like a child. Remember when we were fed constant propaganda about Justin Trudeau as the consummate family man? You never see his kids anymore. Remember when elbows up rhetoric reigned underneath his rule before he was replaced by the parachuted in Prime Minister Mark Carney? Remember how he defamed America and talked about the superiority of Canada? And then he went down there and got himself a girlfriend, and now he spends most of his time down there screwing around on the beaches. And occasionally he comes back to Canada where, to add insult to injury, he walks around unfettered with security paid for by you so him and his girlfriend can have a good time putting out TikToks promoting terrible music. But I did say in yesterday's edition that today's episode would be dedicated to the broader geopolitical situation. There's a lot to talk about there, and my blood pressure can only handle so much Justin Trudeau. So I want to hear from the late and great Charlie Kirk, who was murdered for his views, for a moment. Let's listen.
My whole life I've been told that Iran is getting a bomb.
Iran will be capable of producing alone, without importing anything, nuclear bombs within 3 to 5 years.
Iran is getting a bomb.
Iran is gearing up to have to produce 25 bombs, atomic bombs, a year.
Iran is getting a bomb.
They're very close. They're 6 months away from being about 90% of having the enriched uranium for an atom bomb.
Iran is getting a bomb.
Iran is so dangerous. Weeks away from having the fissile material for an entire arsenal of nuclear bombs.
Iran is getting a nuclear bomb.
They have the wherewithal, the stored up, preserved knowledge to make a bomb very quickly, if they wanted to do it.
And yet here in 2025, they do not have a nuclear bomb.
If not stopped, Iran could produce a nuclear weapon.
So why should we trust the American intelligence without verifying it? Now, the other side of the argument is, you know, kind of, oh, Iran is this big threat. Same people that told us that Iraq was a big threat.
There is no question whatsoever that Saddam is seeking and is working and is advancing towards the development of nuclear weapons. No question whatsoever. If you take out Saddam's regime, I guarantee you that it will have enormous positive reverberations on the region.
The same people that told us the Taliban was a big threat.
And the way to deal with the terrorist regimes, among other things, was to apply military force against them.
The way we did in Afghanistan.
The way, for example, I want to answer your question.
Well, I guess I'm running out of time, so I quickly was trying to get there. We've done, I think, what you proposed in Afghanistan, yet I haven't seen that sort of neighborhood effect.
Well, I think there's been an enormous effect.
I'll be honest, fine. I mean, I don't like Iran, but the evidence shows that every single one of these people, the last couple of decades, that is pushing for a conflict with Iran, has not just failed miserably, has been one of the greatest catastrophes in American foreign policy ever.
Netanyahu has been around forever. He's been old for at least 30 or 40 years. And he couldn't have been more wrong about the situation with Iraq and Afghanistan have a positive net effect on the region. It only has a positive effect for Israel. The more chaos there is in the Middle East, the stronger Israel's position is, because Israel doesn't have the population and the manpower and the force projection that the United States does to sow chaos in the region, which is what they need to maintain their strength. And I would note that it's the Israelis who have nuclear weapons, and they're most likely, between them and the United States right now, to be the ones to use them again. And I haven't talked about Charlie Kirk in a while. I get asked every so often how I feel about things. He died for his views on this subject. That much I am certain of. I don't believe the official story. I have been following the case. I have been following the various personalities that are involved in it. I don't believe the official story. I think it's nonsense. There was a plot to kill this man. They destroyed the evidence at the scene. They don't somehow have decent video footage of the guy they claim shot him, and the person that's in the footage just happens to be wearing leggings to cover up maybe a tattoo or something. I don't believe it for a second. I think Charlie Kirk had a come-to-God moment as a genuine Christian where he could not stomach anymore the blood and violence that comes out of the government of Israel, comes out of the state of Israel. Not Jews. Somebody will inevitably accuse me of anti-Semitism. We have to be honest. We have to criticize the government of Israel and the various political factions that just fight over who's going to do more violence and represent at the same time the millions of Jews who see it too. Charlie Kirk saw it. He was going to go against it. And he had in his organization and in his hand the following and the loyalty of millions of people. He was far too dangerous to be left alive at a moment before the war began. People have to remember the sequence of events. Just because now the United States and Israel are in a much weaker position than they were then, just because the war hasn't worked out the way that they had planned, and we're going to talk about that a little bit today, because the Iranians have thrown a great big monkey wrench into Trump's plans of a quick exit to the war. As a matter of fact, let's just move on. I think I've said enough. Before I move on to what's on screen, I just want to summarize that the Iranians have got Donald Trump by the short and curlies. They know he needs an out. They know he's looking ahead to the midterms, and he can see that the Republican Party is soft. And we'll discuss the prospects of the Republican Party in November. I don't think it's as clear a win as those on the left want to say it is for various reasons, and we'll get to that. But they're dangling him. They're saying, here's my ultimatum, here's our ultimatum, and if you don't abide by it, we will go on the offensive in this war. We will further claim the initiative. And there's not much the United States can do about it. I don't think Trump wants to wage this conflict until after the midterms. I'm convinced he wants to go forward with it, but he wants to get through the elections first, and it won't matter if the Republicans win or lose, he will proceed. And Congress and the Senate, if they're controlled by the Democrats, will fight to see if they can stop him. And I think the very foundation of the Republic goes formally on the ropes. It's been under threat for a long time. It hasn't been functioning for a long time. Constitution's beautiful. The U.S. system, as it's designed, is beautiful, but it has not been working as intended for a very long time. And I feel like in this 250th year anniversary, that the nature of the Republic itself might be on the verge of massive change that could very well end it. And it's all coming to a head. All of these various threads are coming to a head at the same time. And I think the Iranians have discerned this. That's why they've issued their ultimatum. They want to force his hand before the midterms. They want to make him retreat, or they want to make him go back to war. One way or another, they're laying it at his feet and dictating terms. And as much as he tries to signal strength, the U.S. position is very weak. On screen, the headline is, Israel's Ben-Gvir advocates killing 30 to 40 people in Gaza nightly while speaking to an ex-hostage. Now, what I really want you to do, and for those who are listening, you're not going to be able to do anything but listen. You won't see the translation, people. You're going to have to read the translation. But what I want you to pay attention to is his body language, which I think is really indicative of just how bloodthirsty this guy actually is.
לא רק אלה שמסכנים אותך באותו רגע. אין, יש שם אנשים שהם לא בני חיים, הם לא צריכים לחיות, הם לא אנשים גם האלה. אני בדמיוני רואה את כל עזה שלנו.
אמן.
יישובים, לא רק בגוש קטיף, בכל עזה, לעודד הגירה כמה שיותר, לשלוח אותם לארצותיהם, ואת המחבלים, שום הגירה ושום כלום, אותם להרוג אחד אחד, כמה שיותר מהר, כמה שיותר מהר, שאנחנו ניכנס לכל עזה, נתיישב בכל עזה, נעודד הגירה, ואני אומר שוב, כל לילה צריך להוריד 30, 40, 50 מחבלים בעזה, רק בעזה.
So to boil down what you just heard for those who are listening, this is Ben-Gvir. He's part of Netanyahu's government. He says the people in Gaza are not human, that they should be killing indiscriminately 30, 40, 50 of them a night, that all of Gaza belongs to Israel. This is a government that has been very public about its plan to take every single citizen, what's left. They've killed and injured 250,000 people in their ethnic cleansing operation. I don't use the word genocide because I don't think we're quite there yet, but it is ethnic cleansing. When you kill and injure that many people, and then your plan is to take them all, and you're going to build a concentration camp, what they call a smart city, on the ruins of Rafah, something they've leveled, removed from the map, just like most of Gaza, move them all there, then Kushner and Witkoff and all of the various people involved are going to build luxury high-rises and apartments that the Gazans will never live in, and you have Ben-Gvir saying, kill as many of them as possible, and then move in, settle it, build big settlements, bring Jews from around the world to Gaza, settle them there, and they have the exact same plan for southern Lebanon, where they have ordered 1.2 million people out of their homes, and you can watch video every single day if you're interested in the truth of them just leveling village after village after village. And the government says nobody's going to return to those lands. They will remain vacant. And then the long-term plan is to settle them and expand Israel's reach. And there isn't a nation in the world that has the courage to truly condemn them for it. Why isn't this nuclear-armed country not a signatory to the non-proliferation treaty, because officially they deny they have nuclear weapons, who is engaged in a war of conquest against its neighbors, engaged in active ethnic cleansing? Look up the definition of the term ethnic cleansing. What they're doing fits. When you kill, not just kill, it's the uplifting of the population. When you force a population out and force them into living in a certain area to cleanse the land of their presence, as the Israeli government claims it's doing, so that you can put your own people there, that is the literal definition of ethnic cleansing. Legally, that's what it is. And there isn't anybody in the world who is willing to stand up in an official capacity and actually condemn them for what they're doing. And at the same time, following along and furthering this policy has been a project of Donald Trump. He follows them around wherever they lead this Israeli government. And in the meantime, the United States desperately needs the attention of its own government to fix its massive problems. But before we do, just one more note. The headline is Trump threatens to bomb Oman if it gets in the way of Iran deal. This is from the Bangkok Post. These words mean a lot to the other areas of the world that are now considering whether they're going to be aligned with the BRICS nation and the rise of a new international settlement layer and a new, if not global reserve currency, regional reserve currency. They're looking at the unsteady nature, which I think Trump is trying to project strength, but it's not working. Because when you say things that repeatedly are proven false, like Scott Bessent 2 weeks ago promising us that a deal to open the Strait of Hormuz was imminent every day, and then they turn around and there's no deal, and there's no deal, and there's no negotiations. Saying there's negotiations when everybody else says there are no negotiations, saying that the Strait of Hormuz is open. That's Trump said that this morning, that the Strait of Hormuz remains open. CENTCOM says the Strait of Hormuz is open. Sure, it's open if you want your tanker to get hit by Iranian drones and missiles. It's wide open for you to get damaged and lose your business. Like, the United States is losing credibility. There's this idea, this myth that still predominates in a lot of MAGA support, that the United States has never been more respected in the world. It's not true. There was a possibility to make it that way as the empire was reorganized and brought home to focus on North America's problems, which we're going to get into. There was a vast opportunity to remain powerful and respected. It's been squandered in Iran. And now for the second time using curse words and colloquials to, I guess, try and project strength. It doesn't work. Trump is threatening to bomb a U.S. ally, part of the GCC, if they make a deal with Iran. A deal that Donald Trump, just 2 weeks ago, was celebrating was imminent, that there would be a deal between the Omanis and the Iranians to open the strait, and how good that would be. If they make that deal, Trump is now threatening to bomb them. It's very incoherent at a time when the United States desperately needs to be coherent, not just for American interests, but for my interests up here in Canada. I need a strong and cohesive United States. It's fundamental to my plans, as I've been spelling out for the last almost 2 years now. We're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of me renewing this project. And I still need that. That hasn't changed. I have not changed. What's changed is the Trump administration. Now, I know it's the New York Times, and people are likely to get triggered because I'm using it. You haven't figured it out yet. Some people will. Most of my audience won't. Let me just say a word about that. I had an insight last night that you can make content for your audience. You can make content for the people who respect you. You can make content for your fans without catering to them and giving them what they want. Basically, I can be authentic and worry about the people who give me the positive feedback and stop trying to reach people. It's not really my responsibility to reach everybody. I should just do what I'm doing and continue to do that. And I use all sources, from the Bangkok Post to the South China Morning Post. I read all sorts of stuff. And it doesn't matter. I won't read you the spin. I just want to look at the charts. The economy is slowing. And here it is, in charts. This is the reality. The pandemic rebound doesn't count because there was so much money printing. They expanded the money supply, not just the money supply. They expanded so many things. They inflated so many things. So it's not surprising that you had a 6.2% rise in real domestic product. The worrying part is the decline. But this is the chart that I really think everybody should be paying attention to. And this is the deficit. The deficit is projected to keep growing. I don't care what it's projected to do. I'm looking at 2026 right here. This is the important one because it's over $2 trillion. The United States is short $2 trillion at a time when Treasury bonds, the 30-year, I believe, is now above 5%. This is becoming unserviceable. And it looks like the Federal Reserve is going to be forced to not lower interest rates, but to raise them because of the treasury bond problem. And this is all going on while there's a lot of dumping of treasury bonds on the global market. This has been happening for a while, but the trend is accelerating, and I'll try and look at that before we wrap this up. This is a problem. There is no plan for the U.S. administration to deal with this. The United States cannot afford the Iran war any more than it can afford to rebuild the military the way that Donald Trump thinks that they should. The United States has expended its expensive ammunition. It needs to get cheaper and slimmer and more effective. It cannot maintain its global empire. This has been true for 12 years. And yet here we are still having this discussion. It's been true longer than 12 years. The national debt is about to break its World War II record. Federal debt as a share of GDP. The Third World War, for all intents and purposes, is probably already going on. I don't know where it goes from here. I hope it doesn't spiral out of control. But when you can draw a 6,000-mile arc of conflict starting in the Baltic Sea and ending somewhere in the Indian Ocean, it's probably a global conflict, especially when it just so happens that the various aspects of the conflict, whether it's Ukraine or Iran or Iraq, seem to have the same players beside the sides that are doing the fighting. It's, for all intents and purposes, a global conflict, but it has not reached the scale of destruction of World War II yet, and yet there is America's financial situation. manufacturing employment has stalled. Without tariffs and all of the trillions of dollars we have already taken in, our country would be completely destroyed. Tariff refunds are in full swing. Hundreds of millions of dollars in payments for the tariffs collected. So it's not just that the tariffs were collected. There's an administration that collected those tariffs that drew wages and made expenses. So they tariffed it. They collected the money. And now they have to administer the refunds. It's wild. Inflation has caught up with paychecks. Gas is above $4 a gallon. This was a big part of Donald Trump's campaign, was bringing down gas prices. And we are now entering, we're in month six of the conflict, depending on how you want to score it. And I heard Mike Johnson this morning, and I hear Donald Trump talking about how in the wake of the war, we've just had to do this little thing. It's not a forever war. It is a forever war. There's no way for the United States to get out without an undignified surrender, which I don't think they're capable of doing. I think they're trying to buy time. The Iranians aren't having any of it. They smell blood in the water. And I heard Mike Johnson say, you know what? We just got to stick to the plan. I heard Glenn Beck the other day say, we just got to stick to the plan. You know, we're almost over the finish line. Donald Trump is producing magical results that are fantastic. And the danger is that we'll dump Donald Trump. We'll dump the Republican Party on the verge of victory. That's the danger. It's November. If we just get through November, everything's going to magically work out. Newsflash for you, folks. It ain't going to work out. No matter who you vote for, there's a crisis coming in the United States. Doesn't matter who's in office. I would prefer adults were at the wheel, not these democratic socialists who are, let's just call them socialists, who are very good at talking points, very good at addressing. And this is the key. They're actually addressing the problems that small America is facing, low-income America. They're addressing talking points towards those people, but they don't have solutions. And a lot of their rhetoric is batshit crazy, to be completely and thoroughly honest about it. And this is the thing, getting into the midterms, and why I don't think it's a clear, I don't think it's a clear win for either side, because Americans are presented with two terrible choices. On the one hand, they have an administration that has abandoned the independence and abandoned its promise to middle America, just the facts, whether you like it or not. And on the other hand, they have these socialists who are pushing out centrism in the Democrat Party to the point that the establishment shills, the people who would do much the exact same thing that Trump is doing now, literally, whether it's being alongside Israel or spending into the ground from a centrist position, are scared to call out the creeping radical socialism that's coming into the Democrat Party. That's how strong that wing is. It's a threat to the entire political system, which is a subject to explore maybe in a video somewhere down the road, but Americans don't really have a good choice. It's like, to quote the late Lindsey Graham, it's like being forced to choose between being poisoned or shot. It doesn't really matter how you choose. You're going to end up with the result. I would prefer adults were at the wheel. We have home costs have barely gone down. Mortgage rates are stuck at near 7%. God, when I bought my house back in 2010, my first mortgage was 3.15%. And then my second one was 2.95 when I renewed. And then the third time round, it was like 2.75 or 2.85. It was ridiculously low. When I signed that 3.15, I thought, this is the lowest it's ever going to be. I couldn't believe how cheap money was at my level. Like, money was cheap from the Bank of Canada. Money was cheap from the Federal Reserve for a very long time. Very low interest rates. But then it goes to the banks and it gets passed down. And by the time it gets to me, you know, it's worth 2 or 3%. But even 2 or 3%, man, that is some cheap money. You know, you want to build something, you want to get a business going. I mean, most people took it and gambled it and pissed it all away. But if you actually wanted to do something to finance something, man, money was cheap. It was legendary time. 7% is a crushing number, 6.7%. And my concern is that we're just at the beginning, because treasury bonds and the problems we're facing, and when I say we're, it's because it's an integrated monetary system. All of us in the West are dependent on the Federal Reserve and the U.S. dollar, for now at least. And there's a lot of pressure building to tank the economy. Everybody talks about the stock market. That's the counterpoint to all of this various economic data, which is telling you, like, you can look at charts or you can listen to, where is that fellow? This guy. This is just some guy. Minnesota Implement. 28 years in business. We have seen and survived this type of economy before. We talk real numbers. Overhead is much higher this time. Wish us luck. I mean, 500,000 people have actually watched this, which is awesome. Guy's only got 9,000 subs. I don't even know how I found him. But he talks about real America, brick and mortar America, and how it's getting crushed. He's very specific. He goes through the cost of energy, which has gone up 25 or 50% for him. He details that the air conditioning in the shop costs $34 a day and how he's gone from 10 employees down to 2 or 3, how insurance costs have gone through the roof, what he's left with. Like, the trouble that the real economy is facing is highlighted by people like this, with his sweaty face and his dirty shirt and his dirty shop, because he's gritty and he's working. You don't have to believe the charts. The situation's pretty dire in America, and where, if America sneezes, the world gets a cold. And that goes for Canada, too. I highlight all this because people need to understand that the U.S. military needs to downsize and come home. The U.S. needs to really reduce its expenditures and deal with this problem. It can't be focused on an expansionist foreign policy or even maintaining the size of the empire. And Trump, when he campaigned, recognized this. But something changed. The headline is Global Bond Markets Put Governments on Notice Over Fiscal and Inflation Risks. And I'll read. Long-term borrowing costs from the U.S. to Germany and Japan hit their highest levels in decades on Tuesday due to ballooning government debt and geopolitics, raising borrowing costs for companies and households and complicating policy. Bond markets are entering an era where the inflation and interest rate outlook is more uncertain and the upside risks are greater as U.S. President Donald Trump's policies from tariffs to war upend the global order. Yes, he is rewiring and restructuring the global order. I had hoped it would be much more orderly than the chaos that has been unleashed. I saw an opportunity for order on the way down. That's kind of why I thought Trump was the guy for the job. Suppose I was wrong. Debt levels in developed countries are reaching levels that look increasingly unsustainable, with the U.S. debt pile nearing $40 trillion. That will happen very soon. The war in Iran is dragging on, pushing up oil prices and inflation and hitting global growth. If the Iranians take the initiative and go on offensive, if they can manage a ground invasion of Kuwait and occupy U.S. bases there, even burn them to the ground before the eyes of the world, which I believe is within their capacity, or they cut those internet cables that are heading up through the Persian Gulf. Hopefully you've got Starlink so that you can remain connected, at least regionally. It's one of the beautiful things about Starlink. Man, can you imagine when reality comes crashing down on the paper promises that prop up the stock market? I mentioned the stock market earlier. The only reason it's at all-time highs and the only reason it's doing as good as it's doing is because you can control the stock market through paper manipulation. You can print money, you can play games, but eventually reality, which is building at the door, it's like pressure. Eventually the door is going to burst open and reality is going to come home to roost. And I think we're getting close to that inflection point. Other things that are going on is America's rural lands are burning. Trump was going to tariff Canada over wildfires. Well, most of our fires are out, not in BC. But the Ontario wildfires that had everybody up in arms in the U.S. Northeast are gone. But as time goes by, the wildfires in the western states continue to burn, and a lot of that smoke ends up in Canada. I don't see us threatening to tariff anybody over it. Maybe because those tariffs would be ineffective, but I see a series and sequence of distractions and superficial plays from the Trump administration that do not address very serious concerns. Here's another one. Two largest U.S. reservoirs hit record lows among Western drought. This came out yesterday. I talked about Lake Powell. I talked about Lake Mead. These idiots want to talk about climate change. I mean, as my issue with climate change is not that that climate change isn't real. It's the attribution entirely to human causes. The idea that climate is, generally speaking, somehow this magical, stable force that until humans came along was reliable. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, the history of the last 10,000 years is largely governed by what the weather was doing. And it seems to be that the West is in a multi-hundred-year, multi-century drying trend. It's the same as the Mediterranean, the same as Sicily, and the regions of the Mediterranean that have been experiencing prolonged drying. And within that prolonged period of increased aridity, you have episodes of moisture and you have episodes of severe drought, but the trend over time, if you smooth the lines, is down and dry. Well, the Southwest United States is going through the exact same thing. The reservoirs they built were built for, like, there was less agricultural use, there was less industrial use, there was less people overall. The infrastructure cannot keep up, and the input water that's coming in is shrinking. This is a huge problem that will, I think everybody's content to put on the back burner and pretend doesn't exist or not even think about it until the day the Hoover Dam stops producing power, or until the day people have no drinking water at all coming out of their taps. There's already massive restrictions in place, but maybe this problem is too big for people to actually consider and analyze. But you would expect your presidency and you would expect your government to address this issue. I don't think weather's going to fix it. And I mean, Trump drops map of Hormuz as U.S. territory. I'm not really sure how water can be U.S. territory. I have no idea. Like, it's memeing. And I'll wrap it up there by going to Donald Trump's Truth Social. It's a lot of memeing. It's signaling. It's AI nonsense. It's handshakes. It's user-driven polling. It's none of it is addressing the really big major problems and the bills that are coming due. I'm Frank Vaughn, and more often than not, I find it impossible to keep a video to the 20 minutes that I'm aiming for. I'll see you in the next one.